Good afternoon. And thanks so much to the organizers for organizing this great set of discussions and for inviting me to speak as well. I'm Jenny Vaughn. I'm a program officer with Mercy Corps' conflict management team. And I'm going to speak a bit about, first of all, the important role that we believe business plays in conflict zones, but also some of the recommendations that we would offer for how businesses should operate in these zones. Just to introduce Mercy Corps, first of all, we're a multidisciplinary relief and development NGO. We're operational in about 40 countries around the world, primarily in conflict-affected environments. And the reason that we work in these so-called transitional environments is because we believe that they offer the greatest opportunities for positive change. So we work in places like Iraq, Afghanistan, Pakistan, Yemen, Somalia, Gaza, the West Bank, and a number of other countries. We work across a range of sectors, but we particularly focus on economic development as well as on conflict management. When I was asked to give some remarks about how business should operate in conflict zones, it occurred to me that the first question to answer is, should business be operating in conflict zones? There's a number of risks that the companies absorb, financial risks, risks to the safety and security of staff, and there's, of course, a number of risks that the communities face. In particular, there's a number of risks to human rights that arise when companies operate in conflict-affected environments. You can see a list of some of the main rights that are often affected, but these include the right to own property, the right to life, the right against arbitrary arrest and torture, and the right to a minimum adequate standard of living. There's a number of areas in which business practice can particularly impact these rights. That includes a number of things. I'll just give a few brief examples. Security arrangements are key. Businesses want to protect their staff, they want to protect their facilities, but you need to make sure that the people providing security aren't committing any kind of human rights abuses in terms of using excessive force. Labor practices are another flashpoint. Communities want to feel that they're benefiting from business involvement in their region. They want to know that jobs are being created. It's also important that businesses' hiring policies don't reinforce existing lines of discrimination or marginalization. Access to land and other natural resources, whether that's water, forest, specifically resources that communities require for their livelihoods, is another hot button issue. And negotiating access and use of those resources, as well as providing adequate compensation when communities are no longer able to access those as they were in the past, is really important. So then, should businesses be operating in conflict zones? My own view, and I think that of a growing number of both practitioners as well as policymakers, is that absolutely yes. And there's a couple of different reasons for this. The first, as somebody else mentioned earlier today, is that in the end, it's not humanitarian assistance or development assistance that is going to raise countries out of poverty. In the end, it's going to be private sector investment. More than that, over the last 15 or 20 years, there's been a growing body of literature that has linked poverty and conflict. So in other words, countries that are poor have a much greater chance of being affected by violence and instability. So in other words, those of us interested in promoting peace and stability are also interested in promoting poverty reduction and development. And again, private sector investment is going to be key to that. And in addition, as has also been mentioned by others here today, private sector investment can actually play a very active role in protecting human rights and in promoting peace and stability. So in other words, all of that's to say that development practitioners like myself, as well as policymakers that are interested in poverty reduction or stability promotion, we're all very interested in ensuring that businesses are operating successfully in conflict zones, and also that they're operating in a way that's not worsening conflict and that's not abusing human rights. So, how should businesses be operating in conflict zones? I wanted to start out by making reference to the guiding principles on business and human rights, which I'm sure most of you have taken a look at already. These principles offer three overarching recommendations and then provide some more operational tidbits about how to go about doing this. But those three key overarching principles include having a policy commitment to respect human rights, putting in place a human rights due diligence process, basically a process that allows you to identify and then prevent and mitigate negative impacts to human rights. And then finally, putting in place a process to address human rights violations, a remediation process. I wanted to offer a couple of additional specific recommendations for how I think businesses should go about operating in these conflict-affected environments. Businesses are expected to account for a lot of issues these days, but I think happily, the principles of what's known as conflict-sensitive business practice is very compatible with a framework for protecting human rights in conflict-affected environments. So, in fact, my first recommendation is to be conflict-sensitive. What does that mean? Essentially, that means make sure that when you're operating in a conflict-affected environment, you're not making that conflict worse. Ensure that you are not doing any harm. So that's a term that's commonly used, taken from medical practice that I think many of you are probably familiar with. Basically, this idea that when you are operating in some of these fragile environments, that you are doing no harm. A key piece of that is knowing the context. That, of course, means that you've conducted some kind of analysis of the situation. I think a lot of you already conduct social impact analyses or environmental impact assessments. You also need to make sure you're conducting a conflict analysis. And that's specifically going to focus on understanding what the local causes of conflict are, and not just the local causes, but what are the factors at the national or even the regional level that might be driving conflict in the areas where you're working. You also want to make sure to identify the actors involved in that conflict. Who are the people committing violence? Who are the people who are pushing somehow the commission of violence? And who are the people in the community who might be acting as a force for peace? And then critically, you want to make sure you understand how your business operations are affecting that environment. Just as an example, there's been a lot of discussion today about supplier relations and managing your supply chain. You need to make sure, for example, that one of your suppliers is not affiliated with one of the local armed factions, because if you're providing financing to that supplier, you may be, in fact, financing that local armed faction and thus fueling the conflict in that area. Another key issue is making sure that you cultivate relationships with the community. And in particular, it's important to be proactive, to be inclusive, and to be very transparent in cultivating these relationships. I think many companies, certainly in the past, have tended to respond only when something negative has already occurred, or they only respond to negative actors, people who are vandalizing, people who are maybe armed groups with whom they need to negotiate. I think that the time to begin cultivating the relationship with the community is when you're exploring opportunities to set up operations in a particular area. A lot of conflict-affected environments are places that don't have a very positive history of foreign interaction. Maybe they're countries that were previously colonized. Maybe they're countries that have had otherwise exploitative relationships with companies. So companies are often perceived as being very mistrusted and as coming in to take advantage and steal, often in collaboration with the government, from the community. So it's important right from the get-go to establish a dialogue with respected leaders in the community, and not just the respected elites, but making sure that, again, you're including a broad range of actors in the community so that you're not prioritizing or preferencing one group over another. And you're also ensuring that you're well aware, again, of the different ways that your operations might impact different groups of people in that community. One of the key recommendations from the guiding principles is, in fact, setting up these grievance procedures. So I won't dwell on that too much, but I think that's a key component that I just wanted to emphasize. It's inevitable that problems will arise. So it's important to be proactive in setting up procedures for dealing with complaints from the community and ensuring, again, right from the beginning, that people know how to approach your company. And a key piece of really the previous point as well as this one is staffing, making sure that you staff correctly, you have the right people in place, and that those folks are trained in how to interact positively with community members when a problem occurs. And then finally, I think perhaps the most important recommendation is making sure that all of the practices you put into place are mainstreamed into your core business operations, the daily activities of all of your departments. It's certainly not adequate, as many others here have noted, to have a policy. You need to make sure that those policies are put into place where the rubber hits the road. And so what that, again, really means is making sure that people in your various departments at the field level know how to handle human rights complaints and know how to act proactively to avoid them. A lot of companies, I think, handle the cultivation of positive community relationships through one-off corporate social responsibility style projects. And while I don't want to downplay the importance of these projects, because they can meet real needs and they can clearly positively shape perceptions of the company, I do want to make it clear that those kinds of things aren't adequate. Your daily operations in terms of your hiring policies, your procurement policies, and so on are a lot more important to shaping your relationship with the community and avoiding conflict with that community. The last thing I want to discuss is, you know, I think echoing a bit of what Ursula had said with regards to the UN Global Compact, is the idea that not only can businesses avoid violating human rights and exacerbating conflict, there are actually things that businesses can do to proactively promote a peaceful environment. And I think there's been a lot of work over the years that have shown that promoting a peaceful and stable environment is key to promoting an environment in which human rights can be protected and in which human rights violations can be prosecuted and addressed. And there's, actually, I don't know how well you can see that. There's a range of things businesses can do. And for those of you interested in this issue, you know, Bennett mentioned a number of resources, but I'd again highlight some of the resources put together by International Alert that do speak specifically about what business can do to promote peace. But a few things that I'll just call out that are, in fact, reflected by some of the examples we've heard today. Businesses can be involved in building or rebuilding key pieces of infrastructure, things like railways, which allow economic activity and trade to take place and help to promote, again, economic stability so that peace can reestablish itself in a country. Businesses are often the key source of job creation, so being able to provide jobs to locals in an equitable and transparent manner is also key to promoting peace. Business can also be a really good way to bring conflicting parties together. Maybe people who are divided by religious lines or ethnic lines who might not have a neutral space in which to interact. The workplace can provide an environment to do that and to break down some of those stereotypes so that people can begin overcoming some of the individual attitudes that might perpetuate conflict. And finally, business can play a very active role in promoting peace in terms of advocating and lobbying for policies that promote economic activity, that promote trade, and that at the same time enable the establishment of a peaceful environment for local communities. I will end there.